The Time with Josie. Chapter 7. One raw Tuesday morning, I awoke and pulled the shade aside. The trees were charcoal smudges against an iron gray sky. Josie wouldn't be up for another hour or two. I hadn't done my homework the night before. Hadn't even thought of it. I'd fallen asleep watching television with Henry next to me on the couch, and Josie working at the kitchen table. I still faced rows of math problems. 3 pages, maybe 4. And there was a social studies composition on Henry Hudson. I tried to decide whether I could work on it now. It was early. I popped bread into the toaster and opened a can of Salmon Delight for Henry, who sniffed at it and walked away. "I can never figure you out," I said, and buttered a square of toast for him instead. Then I pulled my books off the shelf and sat at the table with one of Josie's knitted shawls around me. In back of me, I had the radio on. 2 weeks until Christmas. It had snowed upstate, 6 inches. Ah, snow for Stephen. Were they up yet, the three of them? Were they having breakfast in their winter house in Hancock? What would it be like if I were there, doing my homework, eating Izzy's apple pancakes? The radio announcer said it was a foggy day on Long Island at 8:03. I finished the first page of math problems. I could never do the rest in a half hour, never mind Henry Hudson sailing up the river. Maybe I could take one more day off, just one. I grabbed my jacket and pad and went out the back door, holding it open for Henry to come too. The canal would be wonderful this morning, with a mist rising off the water. And all the while I jogged toward the jetty, I knew it was a mistake. But still, I kept going. When I got to the pier, I sat, hands clenched in my pocket against the cold, my legs dangling, watching the fisherman on the Dan Bar J gear up to go out for the blues. He knew me now and waved. Last week, he'd even dropped a flounder on the bench for me. I had pan-fried it with a little butter, and Josie had put 2 dusty pink candles on the table, almost like a party. Henry had loved his share. He hadn't scratched at me once when I put his plate down in front of him on the radio. "Ah," I'd said, pleased with him. "You'd do anything for a handout." Now I watched the fingers of fog drift over the water while Henry sat nearby, washing one mangy leg. It was the kind of day I loved. I couldn't see the end of the pier, and no one could see me from there. I could hear the fisherman from the Dan Bar J, though. "Want a job?" he called. He wasn't thinking about school either. A job? Why not? There'd be money for cat food, a couple of cans of ravioli. I hadn't had ravioli since the stucco house. I nodded and found myself hosing down the deck of the Dan Bar J. As I scrubbed at the dried-on pieces of fish with a wire brush, I spent the money in my mind. He handed me 3 crumpled-up bills. I smoothed them out, and then, as I gave him a half wave, he reached into his pocket and gave me another dollar. I couldn't wait to get back to Josie. She'd pat her scarf around her neck and fuss with her hat. We'd sail up and down the aisles of DeMattia's food store, picking and choosing ravioli and a pink can of shredded tuna for Henry. Maybe some marmalade, too, to have with the English muffins we had left. I had forgotten all about homework and school and even the mustard woman. Henry and I headed home as the fog lifted and the sun appeared behind the trees. It was going to be a beautiful day, a day for a picnic on the rock jetty. I pulled open the back door and stopped. Above the newscaster's voice on the radio, 9:30 and still snowing in upstate New York, was the sound of voices in the living room. Henry heard them too. He scampered back outside to sit on the bench, an irritable look on his skinny face. I thought about scampering with him. I knew who it must be. But how could I leave Josie alone with her? Instead, I shrugged out of my jacket, put my pad on the table, and lifted my chin as I went toward the front of the house. The mustard woman sat on the lilac couch, and Josie sat in the chair opposite. They both had cups of coffee in their hands. "Good move, Josie," I thought. Her coffee was great, dark and rich as the advertisements went. I nodded at the mustard woman and sank down in the third chair, facing the window, looking out as if something wonderful were going on right there in the front yard. They talked about old movies and the wonderful colors in the living room. They talked about coffee waking them up, and all the time my heart was pounding. Without looking at the mustard woman's face, I knew she was straining at the conversation, that this wasn't what she wanted to say. She was wearing sweats. Did she ever wear anything else? I could see a round, creamy spot on her chest. She'd spilled her coffee. What was the matter with that woman anyway? But Josie looked fine. Josie looked wonderful, with that slash of red across her mouth, a silky green dress that looked like the sea. I knew she was groping, though. She had no idea who the woman sitting across from her was. At last, the mustard woman put down her cup. "Hollis," she said, "I know I'm keeping you from school." I waved my hand. "No problem, lady." She looked at Josie then. "I think, Mrs. Kale, that we need to talk about another place for Hollis." Josie sat up straight. I could see her thin hands on the coffee cup trembling a little, her mouth too. "Hollis is leaving?" They both looked at me. "I found a family for her," the mustard woman said. "A mother and a father with a 3-year-old boy and a dog." She kept leaning forward, trying to make me look at her. "I think I remember you like dogs, Hollis." "Sharks," I said, "and barracudas, not dogs." "A family would be nice," Josie said. Too late, I thought. "But not today," the mustard woman said. "It will be a few days. I'll want Hollis to meet them first. They're not so far from here. You and Mrs. Kale will be able to visit sometimes, Hollis." She stood up then. "I'll keep in touch," she said. "Would you like me to drive you to school now?" I shook my head. "I can walk." She turned to go. "By the way," I said, "you have a sticker on the back of your shirt. XL. She tried to look over her shoulder. "Extra large," I said, feeling mean.